and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and if you notice and that my introduction was by Norm Shealy, I just thought for those of you that love and care about Norm Shealy, his wife died this week, and he could probably use some prayers to help him feel better. Tonight we're having Stephanie Marone, and we're going to talk about her book, Natural Medicine, First Aid Remedies. How are you, Stephanie?
Well, I'm doing great. How are you, Eva?
I'm good, thanks. I'm tired.
Very sorry to hear about Norm's wife.
I know. She's been sick for a while, and I got an email from him, I think on Thursday, either Thursday or Friday, saying that she died that morning. So I'm sure Norm would probably be grateful for prayers right now because he had been with her for a long time.
Well, blessings to them both.
So, before we get started, tell us a little bit about you and what you do. I know you have more than just this book that we're going to talk about tonight, so if you want to mention a couple of those, where people can find them, where people
Sure.
can find you, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, hello, everyone. I'm so happy to be here with you. And, I'm doing so many different things. Let's see, I have something like 10 or 11 books published, and they're available through the usual outlets online, your local bookstore, wherever. And I came to the books through writing first, and there are a variety of subjects, but pretty much all on the body, mind, spirit topic because that's of greatest interest to me. And these days, I have a farm animal sanctuary, and I'm doing energy healing for animals. I learned various energy medicine techniques, and it's very exciting to me because I think energy medicine is where it's at. I cover it in a lot of my books that are on natural medicine, including this one that we're going to talk about tonight, because there are various techniques, modalities that I cover in here that are would be considered energy medicine, such as homeopathy, for example. Anyway, I'm a writer and editor and working on energy healing with animals and very busy and just enjoying life these days. So grateful for all the many blessings.
Just curious, what modality do you use on animals?
I'm actually in the process of getting certified. I've gone through all different levels of training in something called Healing Touch for Animals. Healing Touch is a very big modality for humans, and the energy medicine that you use for the Healing Touch for humans doesn't work, doesn't translate to animals because their energy fields are different from ours. So this wonderful woman, Carol Commator, modified the healing touch techniques to work on animals, and I'm finding them very powerful. I do that, and I also use, I don't know if you're acquainted with EFT, mm-hmm. Emotional freedom techniques. I've used that with animals with good effect as well, which is also another energy medicine. It's to clear the gunk out of your energy field, including trauma or any negative beliefs and statements you may be carrying in your energy field, which have a big impact on our health. So I use those two modalities pretty much, and then essential oils and also some sound therapy. So it's all good stuff.
Yeah. I'm curious, how do you know what's wrong with them? Are you intuitive, or do they come to you with a diagnosis?
Well, the healing touch technique, for example, you do not need to know a diagnosis because you do an assessment of the energy field based on the chakras. So it's sort of like acupuncture in that way, where you really don't need a diagnosis. You just need to know what the energy is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with this assessment, I might discover that the energy at the sacral plexus is blocked, or the energy at the throat chakra. The sacral chakra or the solar plexus or the throat chakra,
mm-hmm.
Any of those three chakras, the energy can be blocked there, and the energy techniques work to clear it, and that just enhances healing on all levels, including strengthening the immune system and increasing blood circulation and just all the things that will help the animal heal,
yeah,
and which is also true for humans as well, by the way.
Now I have one more question. You know, when people do EFT, a lot of times they're told to focus on the emotion. Obviously, a dog or a cat can't do that, I don't guess. So do you just
right.
do it?
Just so what do I do is I use myself as a surrogate, which you can also do with humans. And I'm tapping for example, for trauma. So, like if I know that this horse, for example, has had a very traumatic life, a lot of horrible things happen, then I'm going to just work with the EFT to clear that trauma, and I don't have to name it. So I may know some specifics, but I can just tap for...
you tap well, you or the horse?
I tap me, but I'm okay. being a surrogate for the horse, so I have to set that intention first
okay.
that I'm tapping for that. And
how's that
so
working?
I mentioned a horse because it was working. It was a very powerful session I had one day with this horse who has a lot of trauma, including starvation in his past. He's living a beautiful life right now, but he really needs to let go of the past in order to be present. So, I was doing a combination of techniques, and that was one I think really, really made a difference for him.
And you can tell the difference?
Well, yeah, he has this addictive behavior, and it was less, and he was more relaxed. For the first time, he was lying down in the sun, which no one had ever seen him do. So
interesting.
Okay. Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah.
So I want to just say beforehand, Stephanie Marone is not a doctor. She's not diagnosing. She's not... telling you how to treat, and neither am I. We're just giving you information.
Thank you very much for saying that.
Oh, you're welcome. Information for you to use and research and have knowledge so you can make intelligent decisions. So,
I just want to add that I've been using natural healing for myself and animals, and I have friends who consult me also. I've been doing this for years. It's my primary medicine for myself, and I use it as the first line of defense as often as possible with myself and the animals. That does not mean that I'm against Western medicine. It definitely each has its place. So
yeah, I agree.
And I just wanted to also give my website, which has information about all these different things I've been talking about. It's stephaniemarone.com. It's stephaniemarone.com.
By the way, I do too. We don't go to my doctors and our doctors unless we break a bone or have something that's, you know, acute. I do the
Isn't it wonderful to have all these other modalities that we can use that
yes,
work
it is.
So well?
As yeah. a matter of fact, while we're sitting here talking, I'm making a jar of colloidal silver.
Oh, so. And what are you going to use that for, Eva?
Well, I use it. I keep it in my house. For when something happens, you know, if we get some kind of bacterial infection or strep throat or
mm-hmm.
whatever, you know, a wound, this is what we use. This is our first line of defense. And, you know, we get well. First of all, we don't get sick very much because we do a lot of vitamins. We do a lot of orthomolecular medicine in my house.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do... all the other kids are out of school, you know, for 3 or 4 days, and we may be out of school a half a day. My children, I'm talking about.
That's wonderful.
So
you know, the colloidal silver. I had a sheep who had antibiotic-resistant staph infection mastitis. So, in other words, her udder was infected with antibiotic-resistant staph because they tell me that the soil in my county, which I'm in Northern California, is infected with antibiotic-resistant staph from the amount of antibiotics that were used in the livestock industry over the past decades.
Mm-hmm.
So colloidal silver was one of the things that I think helped. We weren't able to solve the mastitis, but we were able to get the udder to go down. So I think colloidal silver is pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yes. My son fell on a stick last summer, and it was kind of like a piece of rotted wood that had a piece sticking out of it, you know, like a little piece where a limb had broken off. But the wood was rotted, so it must have had a lot of bacteria inside it. And he got a terrible infection, probably half as big as a fist. And he was only 10, so that was a big thing. And all I did was I took a Kotex and cut it in half and saturated it in colloidal silver and changed it a couple of times a day. And by a day and a half later, it was gone. We did no antibiotics. We didn't go to the doctor.
That
was amazing.
Fabulous.
Yeah, it was great.
I always love to hear that.
Okay, so I'm just going to ask you about some of the remedies in your book for my people at home, for my listening audience, that they can do at home.
Great.
Or some suggestions anyway. So the first thing I wanted to ask about, since it's springtime, is bronchitis and respiratory infections and sinus and congestion infections.
Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? A lot of people are suffering right now. The first thing that I would say I interviewed many, many natural medicine practitioners for this book. I can't remember how many, but I think it might have been 50 plus. They all had lots of wonderful things to say, and I had to limit it to what I could fit in the book. So there's way more material that people can find. But the main thing with any kind of respiratory sinus infection is the neti pot, because that can just nip it in the bud immediately. And if people don't know what that is, it's kind of this weird-looking teapot-looking thing with a long spout. And you use it, you fill it with a salt water solution. You just mix salt with water, and you bathe your sinuses with it. So you pour the water into one nostril, holding the other nostril closed, and then repeat it on the other side. And what you're doing is you're washing out the sinuses. And I have numerous people in my life who they have allergies, they're very prone to sinus infections, and if they at the first symptom, if they do this, they can often nip it in the bud, you know, stop it before it starts. So that is something that if people are prone to suffering from that, to have a neti pot, you know, in your house, here is a little warning on that. If two people are using the neti pot, it really would be good for each person to have their own neti pot or to sterilize it in between, because one of my people I know was reinfecting herself because she and her daughter were both using it, and her daughter was working with preschoolers. So she was just, and they, you know, they were putting hot water in it, but they didn't realize they were both using it. So just a little warning. And then, of course, anything to strengthen the immune system when you have any kind of sinus infection, or respiratory bronchitis. So whatever you can do to strengthen the immune system. And the main thing, the easiest for people, of course, is vitamin C. When you were talking about your family, Eva, what are some of the things that you have the family take regularly to keep them from getting sick? Because that's a good thing for the listeners to know.
Well, we take vitamin C just short of bowel tolerant every single day of our life, every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really think that's one of the biggest things that we can do. And we take probably, let's say for a 150-pound person, that person would take 50,000 units of vitamin D3 every single day. Not every day, but every single week we would take 150-pound person. So I adjust that dosage for my kids. My little boy, who's 10, both of my kids are like sticks, so he takes about 5,000 a week, and my daughter takes she's 16, she weighs 100 pounds. She takes about 10,000 a week. So those are probably the two biggest things that we do, and we do probiotics, obviously.
I think probably every practitioner in this book would agree with you on the vitamin C. And then the other thing, of course, for strengthening the immune system is garlic. So some people are, you know, they object to having the garlic breath. So there are the garlic pills that are odor-free, but you need to make sure you're getting a high quality, because you want to make sure that you're getting as much of that whole food garlic as you can.
Is it raw, or do you cook it?
No, raw is best. But if you get the garlic, I don't know if I should mention brand names, but anyway, there's garlic extract that you can get in pill form that is, they call it odor-free, but that's what I'm saying, that you need to make sure that you're getting high quality, because there's a lot of people. Companies are jumping on the natural supplements bandwagon, and so you get what you pay for. So,
and I have to say on that, you can't judge it by its label. What I do for that, I literally call the lab.
Yeah,
that makes that vitamin, and I ask them how they make it, and ask them what preservatives are in it, if any, because you don't want any preservatives. And I make them tell me, you know, what exactly is in your product, how good is it. And there's somewhere, and I can't remember what it was, but there's a site somewhere where you can go to this site. I'd have to go back and search my archives, where you can find out rankings of supplements.
Yes.
So that's possible, but I can't remember what it is unless you know.
I don't, but there are probably numerous ones, and that's the wonderful thing about the Internet. We really can get this information quickly now. But in terms of the fresh garlic, there's a way to take it that, a lot of people are object to just having that garlic breath by chewing on garlic, and it's kind of harsh on the mouth anyway. But if you put it in a teaspoon of honey, so you mince up the garlic, get a teaspoon of honey, and you put the minced garlic in the honey, and then put it in the back of your mouth and just swallow it.
That's a
great way to get down the fresh garlic, because really the fresh is the best.
So let's talk back about a minute about that neti pot. Do you put anything in it?
Well, the only thing that I tend to recommend is the salt water, because that's what most of the practitioners say. And, you know, if you put something else, you might have a, I mean, your sinuses are already compromised if you're beginning to have symptoms, so you want to make sure not to put anything in there that you might have a reaction to. So it's pretty safe with the salt water solution. What do you add?
A drop or two, usually just one drop, of food grade peroxide.
Ah.
I do that. Now, whether somebody else should do that, you know, you have to know that it'll kill you if you swallow it without being diluted, but that's what I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's research now. I have a nurse friend who works in a public health clinic, and she said they no longer use peroxide on wounds, for example, to clean. Even just small cuts, they don't use it because there is this research that's saying that peroxide actually interferes with tissue repair. So,
well, it eats away flesh, so that would make sense to me.
Yeah. So I guess personally I'd be a little hesitant, but you found that works, so that's great. And I think people really do need to listen to their own intuition, and everybody's different. So some people might be more sensitive than others to different substances, and some people swear by it. You know,
for oxygen purposes is the reason
Yes,
I do
the
it.
Oxygen, yeah.
So, but I make sure it's very, very diluted. But anyway, so let's put the next thing, burns. Everybody gets burned sometimes.
Yes.
What can we do
and,
for that?
Well, of course, the fresh aloe. If you have a fresh aloe plant, which is always a good thing to have around your house, just cut off one of the leaves of the aloe. Just cut off the very end, and it has this gel inside, which you buy commercially in the store as aloe vera gel. But a fresh plant works fabulously. That you just take that, put it on the burn. I had a very, very severe burn when I was a teenager. It was most of the back of my hand. And we were living in the Caribbean, and there's lots of aloe just growing everywhere. So I grabbed the aloe, and I smeared it all over my hand. And it gets a little weird because it turns black. but there, I had no the burn healed so quickly, and I had no scarring whatsoever.
That's a great thing.
It is really a great thing, and that's a home remedy that you just can you can grow
and
a pot
works
inside.
Every time. It works every time.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. And you can just have a pot even if you live in an apartment. You don't need to have a backyard to be able to have aloe.
That's right.
Growing fresh.
Okay, my next one is bursitis.
Can I just mention though that also on the burns, lavender essential oil is also really good. That's an antibacterial and skin healing oil. It's very gentle. So you could dilute the oil. You wouldn't actually want to add any oil to that. I think that it probably would be a good idea to just put the lavender right on to cleanse the wound. I personally, if you had a choice, you had aloe in the house, do the aloe. But if you don't, then you have a bottle of that lavender essential oil. And again, it's good to have a high-quality oil around, not use the cheapies, because they don't have as much of the antibacterial properties that the oil, the more quality oils have.
We're going to be talking about oils. Do you have a source that you like?
I do. Let's see. There's some controversy on this, because the Young Living Essential Oils are, it's kind of a shackly kind of pyramid arrangement. But those oils are really incredible. And they're organic. They're either wildcrafted or grown organically. And the plants that the essential oils are made from. But you cannot buy those in a health food store. I have had, you know, over the last 15 years, I've been using OSHA-D, which you can get in Whole Foods, and there's another one, I'm blanking on the brand, but it's an equivalent in terms of the price. People who distribute the Young Living oils say that those are still not high enough quality, but what you want to get is therapeutic-grade essential oils. So you can, again, along with your suggestion, call the company and ask, all right, is this a therapeutic-grade essential oil? Or wherever you're buying it, they usually know. And if it's an herb store or if it's a natural food store, there's usually someone knowledgeable in there that will be able to point you to, okay, yes, this is a therapeutic-grade essential oil, and that's what you want.
Okay. Now, bursitis.
Bursitis, yeah. I had an interesting experience with this.
What exactly is that?
It's an inflammation of the bursa, which are the little sacs that are the cushioning, the fluid-filled cushioning sacs in your joints. So a lot of people get bursitis in their shoulder, for example. One of my first experiences with natural healing was when I was 15, I was a chambermaid in a hotel, and there was a woman working there with me that was totally into natural medicine, and she gave me two remedies for two different situations that it was like miracle healing. One of them was bursitis, and I didn't have it. It was someone I knew. And she said, oh, tell them to take dolomite. Now, I didn't put this in the book because I couldn't find any information about it, but this is anecdotal. This is a little anecdotal story about how dolomite solved this person's bursitis. They had had it for years. They started taking dolomite as a supplement, and the bursitis was cleared up. It was really quite amazing. The other one was someone I knew had a stomach ulcer, and so I asked this woman that I worked with, what should this person do about the stomach ulcer? And she said, have him drink fresh carrot juice. And carrot juice is one of the few things that can regenerate tissue. So he was absolutely amazed that it cleared up his stomach ulcer.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Fresh carrot juice. Has to be fresh.
Organic, so, presumably.
Yeah, always the best. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And so with bursitis, again, here's a lavender oil. And this can be used for massage. It can be used in a bath. You can just put it right on there. You don't even have to give yourself a massage. You can just put it right on, and it soaks in through. I think it's always a good idea why not use lavender? It smells great. If you've got it on hand, try that. There's various herbal medicines for bursitis. You can do a combination. It's a little hard to, when you're combining all these different things to make a formula for yourself. There are many herbal formulas that you can get, and the anti-inflammatory qualities of, like, turmeric, for example, that's usually included in a combination formula. You can get it as a tincture, or you could take it orally as a tincture, or you can get it in a combination herbs. But the thing to remember about anti-inflammatory is that we need to think about an anti-inflammatory diet. And you know who's big on this is Andrew Weil. This is the standard American diet is really what would be called an inflammatory diet. It is why we have so much inflammation in our population. And we're talking about sore joints. We're talking about things like bursitis, all kinds of inflammatory conditions. Anyway, the big culprits here are the processed foods, the sugar, the refined sugar, and then the white flour, all the products we eat made from white flour.
I'd also like to see what you think about, you know, food allergies cause so many problems. I'm allergic to corn. Now that everything's GMO.
Yeah.
And I know I shouldn't eat cornbread, but I did it, and I did it today, And I know every time that I do it, I'm going to have this problem. My arms start getting this funny discomfort in them. I don't know, this funny achy feeling, you know, and I go, why did I do that every single time? And people don't think about food allergies causing physical symptoms.
That's a really great point. I'm glad you made that, because one of the people that I've written about in my books is Devi Nambudrapad. She came up with a technique to clear allergies. It's called NAET, the Nambudrapad's Allergy Elimination Techniques. And she talks about, she's the first person that I heard this from, the amazing number of symptoms that can result from an allergic reaction. You know, we tend to think of the weepy eyes, the weepy nose, you know, the sneezing. But just like what you described, that achy feeling.
And
there
bloating
are,
stomachs. Oh, my God.
There are so many different symptoms. Yeah, so many different symptoms. And people think a food allergy is going to produce only stomach system symptoms or a rash. But it can be headaches. It can be mood changes. There is an unbelievable list of symptoms that are can be as a result of allergies. So one of the big things that people talk about is that we're having a lot more allergies now because people tend to eat the same things all the time. And it's probably a misnomer to call it allergies. It might be better to say food sensitivities. As a result of eating the same things all the time, you can become sensitive to them so that you start having reactions. And so it's always a good practice to try to vary your diet as much as possible. And don't be eating the same things day after day. Mix it up so that you don't develop sensitivities there. And then, may I ask, Eva, did you have the allergy to corn before this whole GMO thing started?
No, I did not.
Uh huh.
Only when the GMOs came around did I develop the allergy to corn and something else. I can't remember what it said, but specifically to corn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's within 20 minutes after I eat it, my stomach bloats out like one of those men you see with those big beer bellies. And every time I look at one of those men, I want to walk up and say, do you know you probably have a food sensitivity or a food allergy? I want to say that. But it only happened when GMOs came around.
And, of course, organic corn now is, we can't be guaranteed that it's close to what it was.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Cause people always say to me, well, I eat organic. Well, there's no such thing as organic corn anymore, really.
Yeah, especially with corn, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
the next thing I want to ask about, because this is something I actually have no clue about, is gout.
Gout, yeah. That is a really interesting thing, because that used to be like in Henry VIII's time, that was a big problem. And it was a problem of gluttons. People who ate really rich diets, you know, all this incredible meat and all those incredible rich foods that the rich, like Henry VIII, could eat, and they would eat too much. And so this gout has had a comeback. It's a very odd thing. And some people think it's because of the Atkins diet, which is so high in meat protein. So I know someone that actually developed gout. She had been on the Atkins diet, and she developed gout. And it is this that one of the major symptoms of it is this very painful, your big toe becomes swollen and painful and, incredibly painful.
So what do you do? I mean, for people that eat,
you really want to look at your diet because we don't need to necessarily identify causes in order to be able to treat a condition because you're dealing with the underlying imbalances. But it really would be important to look at the diet. And if you're doing the Atkins diet, you need to add some other foods back in to try to get this to back off of it. And I'm not libeling the Atkins diet. I just heard this anecdotally that a number of people have developed this after being on the Atkins diet. And the Atkins diet has done wonderful things for people. But if that's happening to you and you've been doing the Atkins diet, and that's the only thing that changed, you might want to consider reshaping your diet some. And then the things in terms of food, it's really kind of interesting. I love food therapy because we really can solve a lot just by the foods we eat. So the problem with gout is the formation of uric acid crystals, which this is a kind of a complicated thing, but there's uric acid crystallizes in the joints, and that's as a result of an imbalance in what you're putting into your body. So if you're eating too much of the kind of foods I'm talking about, it can produce that deposit of uric acid in your joints, which would be the big toe thing. And this is a great one. This is naturopathic physician Alan Christensen. He's a wonderful practitioner. He says eating a pound of Bing cherries daily can help prevent the formation of uric acid crystals. Well, that is, I don't think you'd want to do that day in and day out, because that's kind of high sugar there to eat a whole pound of Bing cherries.
Expensive, but if you're having an
acute situation and you need to melt it away, that might be one good way to do it.
What is it in the cherries that do it? Do you know?
I don't know, but it could be the bioflavonoids, which is it's a vitamin C type compound, but it has a lot of, what do I want to say, anti-inflammatory action. So the bioflavonoids are in a lot of fruits and vegetables, and they're people who are doing orthomolecular therapy often add that in, because that's a pretty powerful agent. But it's in a lot of foods. So again, vary your diet.
Let's talk about fungal things, because I want to bring this up. Mold. So many people, you know, I'm a medical intuitive, and so many people come to me, and I'll be doing a reading, and I'll say, do your joints hurt? Yeah, I have arthritis. It's not arthritis at all, usually. It's mold.
Mold, yeah, that's another one where people don't associate the symptoms they're having with a reaction to mold, but that's an insidious household infestation that can really affect people very strongly. Ava, I just wanted to, it reminded me when you said medical intuitive, that you asked me earlier, you know, how do I know what's going on with the animals that I'm working with? I really do count on intuition and guidance from,
I thought so. That's
you
why
know,
I asked that
lots
question.
Of sources, but I'm careful not to, I'm careful with, I don't want to project onto it, but I do get a lot of information, and it's usually borne out in what I need to do in terms of the healing. But for the subject that we're talking about now, I mean, fungal infections and mold is actually in a separate category, but I think for a lot of people, the house can be infected with mold. You wouldn't normally get mold on your body, so you would have maybe a fungal infection in your nails that you can use tea tree oil on. That is so effective. I had someone who knew someone, a friend who was had a chronic fungal infection in his fingernails. I think his toenails too, but he just couldn't get rid of it. He tried everything, and again, using high quality tea tree oil. And I think he actually used it undiluted. It's kind of strong, so you have to be a little careful.
You just rub it in?
Yeah, right in the nail bed. And I think my recommendation was, you know, if you can manage to do it twice a day, fabulous, because a lot of people can't manage more than that. And it's a little strong, so you need to go a little carefully.
You can use that for a lot of things, can't you?
Tea tree oil is fabulous. And if you use, again, if you have therapeutic-grade tea tree oil, you can actually put it on a cut as a cleanser. It'll sting, so you want to be careful using it with children. You should probably dilute it or, you know, just tell them that it's going to sting a little bit. If they're the kind of kids that can handle that, great. But some people don't really want to use it with children because it does sting.
Hiccups. I told you, I've been having hiccups lately.
Yeah, so what are you doing for
Why
that?
Why am I having
that?
Hiccups? Well, I don't know what to do about that. My son always scares me.
He scares you. I get it. Of course, that's the old way. Does it work?
No.
It's hard. It's probably becoming harder for him to scare you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you do?
It was interesting in talking to the doctors about this one. There was a one of them talked about the old remedy actually works quite well. The drinking water out of the opposite side of the glass. You're sort of drinking upside down. Have you ever heard of that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, and this person was saying that this actually really does work. So that's one thing. And then in terms of the kind of folk remedies, a tablespoon of dry sugar will usually stop hiccups, says another herbalist that I interviewed.
What do you mean dry sugar? Like granulated sugar?
Yeah, just a tablespoon of sugar.
So we would recommend raw sugar, right?
Yes, we would. Yes, we would. And there are other things that you can do that you don't have to deal with sugar, because some people are hesitant to do that. But I think one of the interesting things about hiccups is the idea that this is a problem in the diaphragm. So it could be, and also can be related to indigestion. So I don't know if it's related to your cornbread or, you know, it could have been. But in terms of the diaphragm, that supporting the breathing. So another one of my aromatherapy people suggested putting a few drops of, you could either use basil, sandalwood, or tarragon on a handkerchief and just breathe it. I'd be interested to hear if that could stop them for you, Eva. So if you have either of any of those essential oils, I'd love to hear the results.
Basil, tarragon, or what?
Or sandalwood, and you just put a few drops on a handkerchief, or if it's a really good oil, all you need is one drop.
You know, I have to tell you, I'm constantly researching things for my radio show, and right now one of the things I'm researching is thyroid, and it's so complicated, I can't fully grasp everything about it yet, so I don't have much to say about it, but one of the books that I read was that if you have low thyroid, sometimes one of the things you'll get is hiccups.
Oh.
And I do know that I have a hypothyroid.
Oh.
So it makes me wonder if that's not, you know, some underlying cause, because I've ran across that several times now researching it.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And just to let people know, I don't cover conditions like that in this book because those are more complicated, as we all know.
It really is.
Yeah, and so what I'm covering in this book is the natural medicine first aid remedies. It's sort of like these are the conditions that here are some things that you can try immediately, and we're not going to go into looking at the whole cluster of what else might be going on. But it's always a good idea to consider, even if you're having something like hiccups, what you were just talking about, that if you're having that consistently, you might want to look at what else could be going on. And for some people, it might be anxiety.
True.
You know, if you look at, okay, I had this event happen in my life 2 weeks ago, I've been hiccuping ever since, well, that could be a kind of clear indication.
So let's talk about edema. And the reason I want to talk about this is because a lot of people, first of all, don't realize they have edema.
Yeah.
But they go to their doctor, they're having high blood pressure or whatever problem, and the doctor puts them on diuretics. I don't know about you, but I'd rather take some natural thing to get the water out of me than a diuretic.
I'm totally in agreement with that. And if these people don't know they have edema, that do you mean that they don't have any swelling anywhere? Like they don't have ankle swelling or?
Yeah. I mean, just because you don't have huge ankles doesn't mean that you don't have some edema.
Right.
Are your rings sitting right, you know? If you press your finger down, do you have a dent?
Right. Here's a kind of a paradox about this condition, which is that it really might be because you're not drinking enough water. So the body is kind of being like a camel. You know, you're not drinking enough water, so it's trying to retain whatever there is. So the one thing that you do want to look at is what is your water intake. Now there's various views on this, and it's been for a while in the natural medicine field that you should drink eight glasses of water a day, eight ounce glasses. I think that's it's too standard of a formula. Everybody's different.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think I've heard, well, from my research, it's an ounce of water for every 2 pounds or thereabout.
I think that's
option.
A better way to do it, because people are all different weights. But also,
yeah,
people have different needs and different absorption rates. So I think it is something to consider if you have this problem. You know, are you drinking enough water? Because people tend to think they shouldn't drink water if they've got this problem, and that's just not true. The little warning in there is you might want to consider kidney function, because you don't want to be flushing huge amounts of water through your kidneys if your kidneys are somewhat compromised. So that's another aspect to consider in this condition. And I think that would be the first line of defense, is to consider your water intake, because it is a, an, interesting little paradox. And then the other thing are, again, we talk about allergies. That can be another cause of water retention. So you want to consider, you know, is this a possibility that you could actually be having allergies and this is one of your symptoms? And then the other one is, an obvious one is toxins. Because the kidneys, the liver is having to deal with the toxins, and the kidneys are also having to dilute the toxins. That the kidneys is where all the water goes through. So if your body is retaining water, it might be because it's trying to dilute the toxins. So you might want to consider, where could you cut back on your exposure? And one of the big ways you can cut back on your exposure is, what are you using in your house? And if you have outdoors, what are you using in your house, yard, garden? And everybody in this time, in these days, should be cutting out as many toxins as they can in their household, because not only for yourself and your family, but for the rest of the world, because all of this ends up in the water table. And no matter, you know, whether it's meds you're flushing down the toilet, you know, whatever it is, it is all ending up in the water table. So whatever you can cut out in terms of your cleaning products, the laundry soap you're using, you know, those little fabric sheets you put in the dryer to fabric softener, that is one of the most toxic things around. It's really, the manufacture of it is toxic, the vapor emissions that occur during its use are toxic, and then its disposal. It goes and sits in the landfill.
Yeah. So that brings up a couple of things that I don't want to forget. I want to say something, but then I want you to tell us, what do we do to get rid of the edema? But I wanted to say, it flew out the window. Oh, I wanted to tell a story, and I'm ashamed of this story, but I can't help it. I need to say it. I bought my kids a hamster one time, and there were all these little gnat things flying around the hamster's cage, and I didn't like it. And so I got some bug spray, and I didn't spray it in the hamster's cage. I just sprayed it to the side, kind of where those little bugs were flying. Later that day or the next day, I can't remember when, it may have been the next day, I went in there to feed that hamster, and it was having convulsions.
That's a perfect and awful example of what it's doing to us.
So, if you know, we may not have convulsions because that poor little hamster didn't get, you know, it was so small, it just a little bit affected it, but spraying your bugs, you know, around your house, or spraying mosquitoes or whatever, it killed that hamster, died.
Yeah, it's a terrible story, but a really great illustration for people, Eva. Yeah.
So how do we get rid of the edema? What are some ways?
Well, again, vitamin C. Vitamin C is a, I don't know the chemistry of why this works, but vitamin C works on so many things. So even just taking 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams daily, it could help prevent this. But again, I want to urge people to consider their water intake and their toxins. And then eating watermelon, I love this one. Because the watermelon is so good for the kidneys, for one, and it's also great for reducing fluids. Again, the sheep that I had with mastitis, I was guided to, I mean, it wasn't watermelon season, and I just got the message, give her watermelon. And when I looked it up online, I saw that this would really help with, because what we needed to do was shrinking. So it's like edema, the same thing. We need to do some shrinking. So watermelon, the qualities of watermelon aid in this.
Well, I want to ask two questions here because I don't want to lose it. What about dandelion? And then you mentioned earlier about your kidneys. What can you do to support your kidneys?
Yeah. Well, one of the big things is what you said. You know, I'm hesitant to say this because I'm not a doctor, but
we've already made that disclaimer. So.
Yeah, all the natural medicine doctors say this is diuretics tax the kidneys. So let's not do that. You know, if you're having a problem with edema, your kidneys are being taxed. So why would you add even more if you could possibly help it? So one of the things to do is nettle tea. Nettle tea is great. It has it's very nutritious, actually. So there's that, but then it's also got the qualities that you need to support the kidneys and also for the drying. It's an astringent. So it's a tonic, which means it nourishes the body, and it's an astringent. So it's got some really great qualities and very high in nutrition. So you just make tea out of nettle. You can get dried nettle if you can get fresh nettle, that's great. But you can get dried nettle in a health food store, buy it in bulk, and just make a tea out of it. It's great. I drink it all the time anyway. I don't have this condition, but I drink it all the time. Maybe that's why I don't have it.
Maybe
and
so.
Then, yeah, and in terms of, what was your other question?
I said how about dandelion and kidneys.
Oh, dandelion, yeah. Why did you ask about dandelion?
Because it's a natural diuretic, but I was going to let you say that.
Well, good, yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting. Dandelion is so nutritious also, and I think it's useful for a lot of different things because it does have good nutrition in it. None of the people I talked to mentioned dandelion for this, so I'm not sure of the relationship for edema. I don't know the answer to that. In terms of the kidneys, well, one of the big things, of course, is the adrenal glands sit atop the kidneys. So if you're under a tremendous amount of stress, you're going to be affecting your kidneys. And then there's the whole Chinese medicine viewpoint of kidney energy. So in Chinese medicine, you're born with a certain amount of, I think it's called before heaven kidney energy. And what that means is that's finite. So you can replenish kidney energy only to a certain extent in your life. And if you burn yourself out, you burn your adrenal glands out, that you're depleting that finite amount of before heaven kidney energy. So I, for example, I have a lot of energy. I love to run energy, and I'm excited about a lot of different things. And it's not always excitement I'm running. I'm running just pure work and overdoing it. That's been one of the things I've really had to learn to balance in my life. And when I went to the acupuncturist, when I was just exhausted. This was 15 years ago or something. What the diagnosis there was that my kidney meridian was the one that was compromised. And it was interesting, the acupuncturist, I'm a vegetarian, the acupuncturist wanted me eating meat. Well, I solved it energetically with the help of the acupuncture, because I wasn't going to eat meat. But some people would say that it's a good idea to eat organic meat in terms of you're supporting your adrenals. I don't particularly think you have to do that, and I think I'm good proof of that, but it really, again, depends on the individual. In terms of the kidneys, I think, an especially good diet would be for the kidneys. This, again, the adrenal glands are so closely related to the kidneys. An especially good diet is you don't want to overdo the sugar and the caffeine, because that gets your adrenals running, and it tends to get that cortisol secretion going. So you're just overtaxing that whole fight or flight system, which is the mechanism response that comes from the adrenal glands are involved in when you get under stress.
Now, we've got 10 minutes, so I want to ask you about another question about this and ringworm, so don't let me forget. But what do you recommend to support your adrenals? Everybody's got burned-out adrenals.
Yeah, no kidding. That's kind of beyond the scope of this book. Let me think about it for a minute, because I've dealt with this a lot in some of my other natural medicine writings. You got another question? I'll think about that.
Well, just go on to ringworm, because my little boy has a ringworm.
Yeah, no, ringworm is in the fungal infection category. It's related to athlete's foot. It's related to jock itch. It's related to the kind of infection that you get on your fingernails. So with ringworm, how old is your child?
He's 11.
11, yeah. With young children, you need to be a little careful with the tea tree. So tea tree is great for ringworm, but the skin is irritated. So, it's a little bit different from a nail infection, which is, you've got the hard nail there, and it doesn't tend to be as you know, it's not on the part of your skin that's really sensitive. So you need to be a little careful, but they do recommend the diluted tea tree oil for the ringworm as well, because that is a fungal infection. And then you need to consider the conditions too. Like moisture, fungal infections love moisture. So if you consider the environment and what, you know, what time of year it is, like, you know, the hot, sticky south that would be more common in the summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the drier you can keep the area, the skin area that's affected by the ringworm, the better.
This is an interesting ringworm. He has had this ringworm on the back of his knee.
Oh, yeah, that's
since
moist
he
part.
Was born. And I treat it, and it starts going away, and then I forget, and he takes it off, and he doesn't do it. I treat it with colloidal silver. And it does work, but you have to do it every day, and then we forget.
Right.
But it's
interesting
since
it doesn't go away. Well, one of the things they do say about fungal infections is you do have to be religious about it. You can't fool. If you really want to get rid of it, you can't fool around. You got to keep going. But the fact that this is an ongoing thing since he was born, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
what do you make
is.
Of that?
I don't know. I make of it that I don't consistently put my remedy on it, and I should.
Oh.
That's
oh yes, because you could just do that as a preventive. You mean?
Well, you know, I'll put it on there for 3 or 4. It'll get kind of bad, and I'll put it on there, and it'll be just about gone, and I'll forget about it, and then it comes back, you know, or it may go away, and I'll think it's gone away, and I probably should do it for a few more days, even after I think it's gone away, and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's something systemic. I don't know, but it always comes back, and it always comes back in the same spot.
Really interesting.
So let's see, what else did I want to ask you about?
Wart. So in terms of the, I think the most important thing, back to the kidneys again, the most important thing for them is a decent amount of water. And when we're talking water, it's really a good idea. I'm sure you've had this discussion on your show before, but, you know, our water is so compromised now that it really needs to be pure, good water. In talking to the various doctors that I've talked to over the years, the different natural medicine practitioners, there are three things that if you do nothing else, do these things in terms of your health. And one of them is drink pure good water. Another one is eat more leafy greens. It's almost like you can't get too many leafy greens.
Let's talk about that water for a minute. We've got just about 7 or 8 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Just because you're buying it in a bottle doesn't mean it's good.
That
Do you recommend the water?
That is a really great point. Plus, I really object to the ton of plastic. It's very disturbing to me to see it everywhere you go in the world now. And so I really like reverse osmosis. There's some people that think that, there's various views on it, but the consensus seems to be that the reverse osmosis process is great. So there are machines now in a lot of health food stores where you can go fill up bottles. So I like that because I have glass bottles, and I go and fill them up because I try not to use the plastic. And
I totally agree with you. It's estrogenic,
yeah.
You know, among other things.
What did you say?
It's estrogenic.
Yes, that's right. And people, you know, they try to save, you know, not consuming more plastic by continually refilling the same plastic bottle. Well, that breaks down. So
another
that
thing,
is not a good idea.
People buy these aluminum metal things. That's just as bad for you as the plastic, I think. You got to buy a stainless steel one.
That's another good point. I'm glad you said that.
One.
I'm glad you said that because there are all these trends toward health, and it's interesting. Sometimes they substitute something that is just as bad. So they're trying to get away from plastic, so they give aluminum. Well,
and you get
that's been shown. There's research that I think everybody's in agreement on this, that aluminum is one of the contributing factors to Alzheimer's. So,
you know, well, another thing, a topic I'm researching right now is addiction.
Mm.
And one of the things that I found that's really, really new, cutting edge, is that this group of people, all of the people that they have done hair analysis on that's an addict, doesn't matter what the addiction is copper toxic and aluminum toxic. Every one of them.
Yes. You know, I wrote a book, The Natural Medicine Guide to Addiction, and one of the people I talked to for that book, a natural medicine practitioner, Julia Ross in Mill Valley, California.
Yeah, she's one of them, yeah.
Right. She has the Mood Cure and the Diet Cure are two of her books. And she talks about the relationship also. She talks about that very subject and also the relationship of the zinc-copper imbalance to anorexia.
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of hand-in-hand with addictions, I consider it to be. And bipolar and bulimia, I think all of them kind of go hand-in-hand together.
Well, bipolar disorder has a whole other thing going on as well, but yeah.
Let's see. How much time? We've got about 3 minutes. Why don't you talk about anything you want to talk about? Well, tell me warts, first of all, because my daughter gets those occasionally.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine, she goes to a homeopath, and the homeopath said, put a clove of garlic on the wart and then just wrap, like, some kind of bandage or something to hold it on there. Put a Band-Aid on it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You do partial clove of garlic. That really works. But you know what I have found really works is Tuja oil, T-H-U-J-A. But again, you have to be religious about it. So do it twice a day and continue doing it until the wart is gone.
Okie doke. Talk about whatever you want to talk about for 2 or 3
minutes. So I wanted to say headaches are from many causes, and they're like homeopathic remedies. I didn't talk much about homeopathic remedies today in our discussion because you really have to choose the remedy that goes with your particular kind of headache. But just in general, one of the great things that one of the doctors told me...
Like a tension headache? Would that be a general headache?
No, any kind of headache. I'm just going to give you a quickie that you can do, and it may help your headache. And you don't have to try to figure out what kind of headache it is, because that can get kind of complicated. It's very clear you can list the symptoms in the homeopathic remedy. That is very clear if you just have it sitting in front of you. You can look at it and say, oh, yes, okay, that's mine. But just for headaches in general, take a sprig of fresh rosemary. And again, you can have rosemary growing in your apartment or out in your yard. Take a sprig of fresh rosemary, crush it up, and just inhale. Can work. That can really help a lot of headaches. So can lavender. Lavender oil, lavender essential oil, you could put that on a tissue or a handkerchief, or even just put it in your hands and inhale it. Again, use a high-quality oil.
I was going to say, make sure you tell us again where to find you.
Where to find me? Yeah, I'm in California. No, it's www.stephaniemarone.com, StephanieMarohn.com. And I just wanted to say I did a series of 6 books on natural medicine guide to so-called mental disorders. So I have one on addiction, one on autism, one on bipolar disorder, one on anxiety, one on depression, and one on schizophrenia. And these are not first aid remedies, obviously. There are first aid remedies you can do for depression, but it is a complicated subject. So these books are looking at more in-depth natural medicine treatments. These are not do-it-yourself-at-home ones. Very helpful, though, because, I don't want to say though, very helpful because they go to the root of the problem, and they're really addressing underlying imbalances instead of just trying to mask symptoms.
Thank you, Stephanie, for taking the time to come on. I'm going to have you back soon. In fact, I have you scheduled on the 24th to come back.
Oh, yes.
But I need to make sure I get copies of whatever we're going to talk about.
Yes, I would love that. And I also wanted to mention a book that I've just finished, that it's coming out next year. It's called What the Animals Taught Me, Stories of Love and Healing from a Farm Animal Sanctuary. And I'm very excited about that, too.
Well, when's it coming out? Is it out already?
February 2012.
All right.
Thank
we'll look
you
for
so
that
much.
One to come out. Thank you, too, Stephanie. It was a pleasure having you.
A pleasure being on. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.